This is the Poetry Magazine podcast for the week of May 22nd, 2017. I'm Don Scher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
I'm Christina Pugh, the consulting editor for the magazine.
And I'm Lindsay Garbutt, assistant editor for the magazine. On the Poetry Magazine podcast, we listen to a poem in the current issue.
In the May issue, we have a selection of poems from the Poetry Review in the UK. It's part of an ongoing collaboration between Poetry and the Poetry Review to introduce American readers to British poets and vice versa.
One of the British poets in the May issue is Emily Barry, who lives in London. Her poem, The End, is a disjointed conversation between two unidentified people. We asked Barry who those people were.
The poem sort of began somewhere where I was thinking about someone who was being filmed and they were having a conversation with the filmmaker, I think. So I suppose it's maybe a kind of internal dialogue, but I don't really have the answer. It's just open to interpretation.
She did think it might be useful to know that the poem is in her latest book, Stranger Baby,
which is a book-length kind of elegy vaguely addressing the death of my mother. But the sort of conversation in the poem isn't necessarily a conversation with her or me or anything like that, but that was the sort of genesis behind writing it, I suppose.
Here's the poem.
The End. I believed death was a flat plane, spectacular, endlessly. Can you distort my voice when I say this? My scared ghost peeling off me. Distortion, she says, as if she has just made it up. And then she is quoting a line from a poem. Or is it a whole poem? I wish I could remember. My voice opens and calls you in. I don't know if you can hear me. I said, I carry inside me the trace of a threat that I cannot discharge. I said, I want to ask you things you can't ask a person who doesn't exist. She said, why can't you ask them? If we can't have everything, what is the closest amount to everything we can have? She said, why can't you have everything? Well, you know, when you're looking for a person, sometimes they appear, and a light goes on and off in the opposite window twice. Yes, you say, that was a sign. Strange love for the living, strange love for the dead. Listen, I don't know who you are, but you remind me of... I wish you would put some kind of distortion on my voice, I tell her. So people don't know it's me. They know what they know, she said. I told a story about my shame. It got cold when the air touched it. Then it got hot, throbbed, wept, attracted fragments with which it eventually glittered, till I couldn't stop looking at it. Exactly, she says. And then she is quoting a line from a poem, I don't know which one. In my dream, she reached out to touch me, as if to say, it's all right. How I began to believe in something. Are you there? The wind called to the trees. And then it happened, and they said, how do you feel? And I said, like a fountain. Night falls from my neck like silver arrows, very gently.
It's intense and entrancing. Mm. First of all, the end as a title tells you there's much more to come. And what there is to come is this kind of interwoven set of voices. And in some sense, we have voices all the time in us. Voices that are ours, voices that seem to come from nowhere or nobody, voices we remember, voices we sort of impute to things. I mean, I've never quite come across a concatenation of voices quite like this poem, but I found it very moving because the effort of trying to hear what the voices are saying in the poem is only a fraction of what the effort must have been to hear them as the poet did. Mm. And that kind of struggling, even sometimes yearning, to make out what they're saying, but at the same time to understand something deep inside that you don't have words for me, provided the key to the texture and flow of the poem and makes it so remarkable.
Yeah, it also seems like the search for one's own voice, or that there's a way of creating or forming the voice of the poem that becomes part of the poem's content.
Can you distort my voice when I say this?
I wish you would put some kind of distortion on my voice, I tell her. And the poem is also, this is a horrible phrase, but finding its voice, which is really a terrible kind of like workshop phrase that's full of cliches. But this is actually, you know, almost like a phenomenological investigation in some ways into what the poem's voice could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sort of like Eliot, I got to use words when I talk to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? and that's really, yes, that's at the heart of it. This is, you know, strange love for the living, strange love for the dead. I mean, the strangeness of it really gets at something about love that I can't say I've encountered in any other kinds of poems that I've come across, so many of which in one way or another do address the dead or the beloved. I mean, that's at the heart of it, that strange love that in some sense consists of voicings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems disembodied, except when you remember that things like the cold and the, you know, that you feel are the story about shame. I mean, all the things are bodily, you know, the wind called to the trees. These are sort of bodily experiences, but what we kind of abstract from them is a tapestry of these words.
I was really intrigued by that shame part that you just mentioned.
I told a story about my shame. It got cold when the air touched it. Then it got hot, throbbed, wept, attracted fragments with which it eventually glittered, till I couldn't stop looking at it. Exactly, she says.
And I felt that the whole poem was sort of building towards that moment in a way, especially with the repetition of like, could you distort my voice? Why would you want your voice distorted? Oh, because you don't want to be recognized. Why don't you want to be recognized? Because you have something to share that you don't want people to associate mm-hmm. with you. There's obviously a lot of other things going on in this poem. And I also read it like you both did as a poem about writing a poem, about having a voice in a poem. And so to build to this moment where this kind of obsessiveness of looking at something and trying to work with something and having it attract all these other thoughts or voices or fragments that come around it until eventually it glitters is such a beautiful way of looking at writing a poem or mm-hmm. thinking about writing a poem that I keep coming back to that section of this poem. Mm-hmm.
You know, at the same time, what's also important is the sense that the poet is being put on the spot, that a person is put on the spot to have to make these connections and to have to put things into words and to have to ask questions and discern what might be answering them. I like that sort of courageous but hesitant tone, which is in, I think, a lot of her poems, probably most of them. It's not a glamorous prospect to put things into words and to listen to the sounds around them. It takes remarkable fortitude and focus, and there's an intensity in that effort that makes this poem and all of her poems so important to me, living in a time when poems seem to spill out of people and have this kind of unthinking immediacy to them, which is part of, you know, it's another kind of writing and it has mm-hmm. a lively appeal to it. But what I like is the sort of furrowing of the brow that happens before anything transpires in this poem. And to me, it's incredibly poignant. You can read The End by Emily Barry in the May 2017 issue of Poetry Magazine or online at poetrymagazine.org.
You've been listening to the weekly version of the Poetry Magazine podcast. We'll have another episode for you next week, or you can get them all at once in the regular Poetry Magazine podcast, which is posted on SoundCloud.
Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Curtis Fox.
The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbett.
I'm Christina Pugh.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.